listening to the Nerds Assemble podcast.
Episode 219 of the Nerds Assemble podcast. I'm Emily.
I'm Paul.
I'm Paul, a.k.a. Cuckoo.
And I'm Paul, a.k.a. Retroid.
And this week we are talking about, for this episode, Star Wars.
Wasn't this on somebody's seminal?
It was part of our, when we did our 200th episode, and we looked at the things that heavily influenced us in our geekish nerdishness. Star Wars was one of the franchises that came out.
Whose was that? Was that Retroid or was that Cookie?
Don't ask me off the top of my head, it's been so long.
I think the answer is probably yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, but both.
It was me and Retroid.
That's fair.
Because we're cool.
I was always more of a Trekkie.
You can like both,
but one's more sciencey and the other's more space opera.
Yes.
I don't like that term. No.
Space opera.
Get out.
One's a space western and.
Come on.
One's more.
Your father. Come on.
Space fantasy, space adventure.
Yes, space fantasy, space adventure. Let's go for that.
And the others more. It feels.
I mean, like with the whole Luke and Leia and Darth Vader thing, it does feel more like a soap opera than. And I mean, you know, Anakin Skywalker in the prequel trilogy does seem more melodramatic and whatnot than.
Which soap operas do you watch? Where people just chop each other up.
I'd watch those.
Lop arms off. Chuck people into canyons.
Ricky, put down the lightsaber!
Only if you make me, bitch.
Oh my god, guys.
No, Luke, I am your father.
To be fair, that sounds completely like something out of a contemporary soap opera.
Yes, it does.
And I'm pretty sure we have had moments in almost all British soap operas where that has happened.
Somebody's arm got chopped off by a big lightsaber.
Probably. I mean, they must be running out of ideas by now.
No, you see, Luke's my brother. Come on. How is this not soap opera-ish?
Because I fucking hate soap operas.
So do we, we are aware of the tropes.
Soap operas aren't set in a galaxy far, far away.
I mean, whenever I've been trapped in a room with a soap opera, I have wanted to blow up a planet.
See, commonalities, parallels, it's all there.
Yeah. It's like, dark side.
Dirty Den is Darth Vader in disguise. Nah, can't find it.
No. No, 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 no.
See, he did kill your father from a certain point of view.
Oh my
God. Come on, this is all family soap opera dramery.
You're losing me.
Am I spoiling it for you?
It's like, oh no. So no soap opera. No, there's no positive way to compare something to a soap opera.
It's just
was jettisoned into a galaxy far, far away and the signal was crap and you can't watch it. That'd be bearable. No more EastEnders. No. Shucks.
Yeah, but enough New Who.
There is no need to stoop to that level, good sir.
Are you going to try and tell me that Russell T. Davis's contemporary human characters weren't almost entirely EastEnders?
No, they weren't. They just happened to be off the same set. And?
Anyway.
Yes, Star Wars. So, Mr. Edroid, going back on the topic, what did you like about this soap opera?
It wasn't a soap opera. That's what I liked about it. That was one of my favourite things about it. You say, yep, this isn't a soap opera in any way, shape or form.
But why was it so important to you as a kid?
Oh, well, I got... let's see. I got taken to a double bill of the first two Star Wars.
Ooh, nice.
Yeah, it was nice, but I remember vividly having a stinking migraine and crying to go home by the time that Vader and Luke had their showdown at the end of Empire.
Oh, bless.
And there's probably someone who's clearly older, than me, who remembers a screaming little shit.
Yeah.
In the cinema, spoiling the double bill omnibus of Star of A New Hope and Empire Strikes Back.
Oh, bless.
So yeah, I
be honest, would he have been more pissed off if you would have actually turned around and said, "He's his father"?
Well, I would have been surprised if I had, because I didn't know. I do remember it was years later that I realised, because I'd seen them all, and because I was so young when I first saw them, they just sort of mushed together. So the timeline got a little bit confused in my head for ages.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. I mean, Martin got confused because the actual first one I saw was Return of the Jedi at the cinema. That was the first movie I ever went to cinema to see.
Wow.
That would be a little bit confusing.
Yes.
So why do all these things happen, and why do they know each other? And
to be honest, I was very young and the Ewoks just kicked ass, and I just found it highly amusing that these little bears were kicking ass at these 6-foot guys in armour.
I liked when some of the Ewoks got shot.
Wow. Retroid's not holding back here.
No. I've got a little bit of a headache and a Monty Python beer.
What did the Ewoks ever do to you?
Nothing is safe. They were cute.
Exactly. What's wrong with that?
Like the children characters in soaps. They weren't bad, but I found them a little bit annoying. And then when they did the special editions years later and added more of the singing,
yep,
it was like, oh, I hate them more. I hate them far more.
Oh, bless you.
So Lucas had a talent for coming up with shit that no one would like.
Yeah. He maintained that talent for quite some time. Well, once he had control over things.
Yeah. Wouldn't it be a good idea if we had Gungans? Yeah, George. Yeah, that would be a great idea.
To be fair, the rest of the Gungans weren't too bad. It was Jar Jar that just pissed on the whole parade. The whole Brian Blessed's character was all right.
Then he did that thing, which was really But yeah, Brian Blessed in the film, that was good. I approve of that.
But other than so before we go on to the prequels, though, obviously for me growing up, Star Wars was big. It was one of the biggest things that ever happened. This was before I'd got into video games, the works.
You had toys,
you had comic books, you had cartoon shows, Muppet specials. It was probably the biggest thing I'd ever actually been able to see as a kid.
Can I just ask?
Mm-hmm.
So obviously that was a massive, massive thing around the toys at the time.
Oh, yeah.
To keep the momentum going for the series. If those hadn't have been, kind of released, if there was no Star Wars toys, do you think that it would have still been as popular?
It would have still been as popular. I think it would have still been as popular with a cult following, but you wouldn't have had the traction of the kids. Does that make sense? So take Highlander, for instance, which did become a big cult classic with Christopher Lambert, but a lot of people like myself didn't actually stumble upon it until my late teens, when a friend of mine was raving about it. No, I didn't know anything about it. Star Wars, though, because of the cool X-Wings and the figures you could buy, and it was on the shops as soon as you walked into Toys R Us and everything else, you were just guided towards that, and you had the lightsabers that you could hit people with, which was quite amusing. So, yeah, I do think the toy line was very instrumental. And Kenner were very lucky with the deal they got, actually, because they got the deal quite cheap. And they managed to make millions out of it, which George Lucas wasn't very happy for when it came around to actually getting the license back for the new prequels. But it was the very first time a toy line had actually been done for a movie.
I think it was a big gamble
on everybody's part.
Yeah.
Because of the imagination and because of the design that Kenner put into the toys as well. So with the detail they put into these toys, it was just incredible, and you couldn't help but just be pulled towards it. Like when you saw an X-Wing on the shelf and then you saw the model on display and people milling around it, you were guided to that and you wanted to see what all the excitement was about. And then you saw this vehicle that flew across the stars with the rings that open up and down, and it was just, oh my god, I've got to have one of those. Dad, get over here. Look at this.
What's this, Dad? I remember I made Millennium Falcons out of plasticine and things like that. So,
Lego. Star Wars Lego, I used to make X-Wings out of the Lego.
Oh, no, I would have liked to have tried that, but I didn't have the right bits.
I didn't always have the right bits, so they looked absolutely shit. But in my imagination, where the X-Wings going?
Yeah. I made them with plasticine. I got the toys. They were, I think, in a world without social media, with very limited TV, opportunities, where VCRs weren't really a thing yet. Then, yeah, the toys helped because they kept things in the consciousness.
Mm.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I wouldn't have known about Star Wars apart from the toys to a degree, and then Return of the Jedi. In fact, it wasn't until about 3 or 4 years later that I saw Star Wars because it premiered on ITV after an episode of He-Man.
I remember when they showed Star Wars on TV, on UK TV, for the first time, and they did make a big deal of it.
Mm. Oh, they did, yeah. They made a massive deal of it.
To the extent that they had specially made adverts.
Yes.
Really?
Yeah, some of the brands made... I think, was there a cigar advert? There was like a Hamlet cigar or something like that. Where, yeah, with droids, and they came out wrong, and they just went said, "Ugh," because the advertising campaign with Hamlet was, well, if everything goes to hell, then at least you still got a Hamlet cigar.
Yes.
Well,
so it's, you know, if it's not turning out right, then at least, you know, at least you can treat yourself to that.
Hamlet is basically the 80s Dr. Pepper.
Yeah.
Not the adverts.
That's alarming to know.
Yeah, yeah. When you say it, yes, the cigar company was advertising in Star Wars.
Oh, yeah. But you're right. They did do special adverts, all lined up. And they must have made a killing on the actual advertising from showing Star Wars, because it wasn't just Hamlet. There was loads of brands that had specially made adverts purely for the Star Wars premiere.
Yeah, but that's just the one that sticks in my mind.
Yeah, Hamlet was always funny, though, because I always used to fall about laughing, especially that guy with the hairpiece where it just fell off.
Yes.
Bless him.
As an aside, anyone remember the sort of spinny, explodey, or sort of, you know, spinning together into form the multicolour Channel 4 logo?
Yes.
Yes.
Mm. Hamlet did a version of that as well.
Yes.
Where it was the Channel 4 thing, which would go, and it would, you know, spin together and all the bits were in the wrong place.
Order.
So it was like, rewind, try again. No, it's still wrong. You know, and then rewind and just sort of, you know, form into a face.
Yes.
And then it would be the, you know, I'll just smoke a cigar because it's all going a bit wrong. But
well,
anyway, yes. So that's an example of the, you know, the kind of advertising. It was a big thing to have Star Wars on TV.
Definitely.
And thinking about it, I wonder if that was part of the whole deal.
Mm.
Because it wasn't on the Beeb.
No.
You know, now you have the whole thing where, you know, the Beeb will throw money.
Yes.
To get the rights for the films. But, you know, thinking back, the number of big films that I saw, either, you know, for the very first time, or, you know, I had to wait, and they were big things, and, you know, we talked about them at school. They were on commercial TV.
Mainly ITV, wasn't it?
Yeah. So things that I remember when Ghostbusters was first shown on TV.
Oh, God, yeah.
And it had the changed lines in it.
What?
That they'd specially filmed.
Yeah.
Really?
Go on before Watershed.
Yeah, it was just, you know, in a tiny little sidetrack here, but I remember the, you know, when they would come out of the dinner hall when they did caught Slimer in the hotel. Mm. And, you know, Venkman comes out and says, you know, we came, we saw, we kicked its ass. In the TV version that I saw, where he was, what the hell's going on? This is different. He just came out and said, well, what a knockabout of pure fun that was.
Oh my God. That's terrible.
And you go, what? Hang, what? What? That's not what he said.
Yeah, the problem for me, though, was because I was a bit younger, that was the first time I ever saw Ghostbusters. So he came out, and it seemed quite natural, so I was like, oh, right, okay. And then I watched it many years later on VHS, and he was all about kicking ass. I was like, that don't sound right.
Yeah.
No, that's not what he said.
That was the first time I saw something, and I noticed that it was, you know, that it wasn't dubbed over, it wasn't cut, it was a different line. Mm-hmm. Delivered by the actor. And it was just, what the hell's going on? You know, am I suddenly, you know, have I slid through a Sliders portal? Am I in a version of, you know, where, you know, Big Ben is purple or something?
I know, I remember seeing Shaun of the Dead having, like, bits where they've replaced the word fuck with funk. And
yeah,
I think that's basically like the kind of aeroplane version, or the, you know, the safer work version, as it were. Which is quite interesting.
The bit that sticks in my mind for Shaun of the Dead for language, it was not the word fuck. So did they substitute that? If you know the bit I'm talking about,
I can't remember I'm not sure what you're talking about.
We're rated high enough on iTunes that you can probably say the word.
Okay. Well, you know, Sean's friend, I can't remember his name in the film, but he comes back to the table after they've been having the discussion about.
Oh, cunts.
Yes. Would any of you cunts?
Yeah.
To drink.
Yeah.
And it's just the way he delivers it, and they all react like they've just been slapped. So would any of you silly billies like a drink? Oh, you. Well, you could say cats, I suppose.
Maybe cats. Yeah, get a bit sexies.
Yeah.
Although,
anyway,
I suppose it would be a bit weird being called a cat.
There's CAD.
Yeah.
So, you know, would any of you CADs and bounders like a drink? What? So everything suddenly goes 1930s.
Anyway, back to Star Wars.
Whole not a soap opera.
Yeah. Mm. So, kind of going away from the prequels moment, the actual sequels, like, you know, episodes 7 and 8.
Yep.
those definitely have a better feeling to them in terms of, you know, kind of feeling like they're actually part of the original, you know, kind of continuation. So, I mean, obviously there's a certain sense of nostalgia with those. How do you think they managed to do that?
Well, one of the things is that they have, you know, they got some of the original people back, didn't they? Yeah. As in, you know, original writers, producers, that kind of thing.
Right, yeah.
It's the storyline. Because it is, in essence, following the same story curve to a degree, especially Star Wars Episode 7, as the original Star Wars. So you instantly feel at home.
Okay, so you feel like it's more of a story thing than anything else?
I think so, yeah, because I mean, the prequels tried to tell the story of it all before it happened. But then, it also is to do with the fact that you have some of the original writers on it. So with the prequels, you could tell there was none of the original writers on it because of the quality of the writing.
And rather than sitting in rooms with George Lucas and having an argument about what, you know, how they should do this, or, you know, George wanting to do that, you know, do this or that. And
reign of it. He was in control.
Again, if anyone hasn't seen the Red Letter Media dissections of the prequels, they are well worth looking at. Because even just the behind the scenes footage, where it's, you know, Lucas and he's talking to people and he is surrounded by people, where he says, you know, wouldn't it be great if everyone was upside down and naked? And, you know, you'll have these people going, that's a great idea, George.
Whereas in the originals, people would turn around and say, George, stop smoking that shit.
In the original, you had Harrison Ford saying, you know, you can write this shit, George, but you can't say it. and things like that. And I recently listened to James O'Brien on his podcast, interviewed Mark Hamill. It's well worth a listen. And, you know, Hamill just comes across as he is just a genuinely nice guy. And even though he's clearly been asked these same things he's very good at just, you know, telling the stories and explaining things and, you know, just being really nice about it. And he gives an example of a line. Oh, I can't even remember it, but he said, you know, it works on, in each individual bit works. And, you know, you can write it down and if you read it, it will make sense, but you cannot say it naturally.
No.
It does not work. And, you know, they tried saying it, but, and it ended up being cut out. It's in the lead up where they're just, They've gone to the Alderaan system and they're, you know, that's no moon. So it's that sequence where, you know, you'd say, oh, that's no moon, we'd best turn back. And there's a line cut and it's like, yeah, it would kind of work written down, but it wouldn't when a character is delivering it. And that's the kind of thing where, you know, Lucas can come up with a storyline, but when it comes to the actual meat and potatoes of how it all works together,
how it gels.
It's the bit like the, you know, the whole you have the creative mind who runs the company and they know what they want to do, but then if they've got real sense, they get experts in the individual areas to do it for them because they know what they want, but they may not necessarily know how to get there.
Yeah.
You get the people in who can get you there.
Yeah.
And, yeah, Lucas seemed to have had a difficulty with that.
All right. Well, moving away from... How much do we want to say about the prequels? I'm going to point out that with Star Wars, I didn't experience them in the cinema until probably, I think, episode 2, so Attack of the Clones. I don't think I got to see Phantom Menace in the cinema because when did Phantom Menace come out?
Was that 99?
Yeah, I wasn't that into Star Wars because I hadn't really watched it at that point, I don't think. Well, I think I'd seen bits of it either on TV or I know my cousins had the gold box set or whatever it was.
Yeah. I can understand that because when something is so omnipresent, you kind of, even if you've never seen it, you feel like you already have, and in fact you've seen too much of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do kind of get that.
Yeah, so went and saw Attack of Clones. I enjoyed Attack of Clones, and actually I think, you know, it's a bit long, but it's got some fun bits in it.
It's a lot, but it's one of the better prequel ones.
And then, I decided to, because they were repeating the films a bit more on TV, so, I recorded them off the telly, watched the originals and that, and then I think watched maybe Phantom Menace as well, which was
But Trade Wars are so easy to win.
So quite a lot of stuff, but I think it was probably with the release of the originals with the prequels, but more the originals on re-released on disc and stuff that I sort of started getting into it more, and then obviously this kind of the revamp essentially with having the continuing sequels, I'm sort of far more into that than maybe the original films, probably because the newer films that we've got now, including even Rogue One, they're made with a level of self-awareness about not just themselves but the genre that the original films weren't, and even the prequels certainly weren't because Lucas was making them. I do remember with some of my cousins, the same ones that had the gold box set, I don't know if they were ever super huge fans or if maybe their dad was just super into it, but they did have a Millennium Falcon, which got absolutely fucking trashed as far as I'm aware.
You had
young kids playing with it, and it wasn't me that was playing with it, it was just them. It's
May I just say, as a young kid who was playing with Star Wars toys, I still have mine. In fact, excuse me while I just... Yeah, there we go. There's my Imperial Walker that's sitting on the shelf.
Yay.
My Millennium Falcon is upstairs.
Cool.
My articulated Jabba in his palace is in a box upstairs.
Wow.
I'm not sure how the extended universe works, but I don't think C-3PO drove the Imperial Walker as he is in mine.
I mean, Star Wars just wasn't something that I was I was very surrounded to until I got older, basically. What about you, Paul?
Me? My dad was always into sci-fi anyway, so I'd experienced, the original trilogy when I was a kid. Probably a couple of years after, everybody else did, because I was so young. Yeah, I mean, they're enjoyable. I will sit and watch them, but it's not something that I would really kind of fanboy over.
Weren't you? Didn't you? You've liked the new ones, though.
Who is this man? What's he doing on the podcast?
But no, I mean, I like him. Just I don't see the massive kind of, have to kind of know absolutely everything about, the extended universe and, all of the, bits here and there. And, I wasn't that far into it.
When it comes to all the stuff that those people say, no, they've erased so much of the extended universe. I didn't encounter most of it.
Didn't you?
I played Knights of the Old Republic 1 and 2. And love those.
Maze balls.
I've really enjoyed those. I read some of the novels, which were, you know, set after the original trilogy.
The Timothy Zahn ones.
The what, sorry?
The first trilogy was done by a writer called Timothy Zahn.
Yes. And those are the ones, yeah.
With Admiral Thrawn, which is an amazing baddie.
Yes, I read those. There was a comic series from Dark Horse Comics, which yes. I've got those somewhere.
Yep.
And it had extended stuff with the Emperor surviving through clones and things like that. So it's like, yes, he got thrown into, you know, the pits of the Death Star and, yep, you know, Return of the Jedi, but it doesn't matter because he's got an army of clones that he just, you know, defrosts one. So, you know, read those. Did not read some of the several of the extended ones. Have not watched things like the Clone Wars TV series. And I've watched one or two episodes of Rebels and thought, well, I probably should watch these, but I haven't.
The Clone Wars is actually surprisingly good.
Yeah.
It really developed the characters from the prequels, and you tended to actually gain more likability with a lot of the characters as well.
So just, you know, Anakin was shit in the films. Why don't we actually just rehabilitate him a bit? That's what I got. It's like he was a twiny, sulky, harassy, sex-bothery teenager.
He could still sometimes come across like that in Clone Wars, but he had his own... He actually ended up with his own Padawan.
Yeah.
He actually turned out to be quite an interesting character.
I know of her.
Mm.
And, you know, there's all that kind of things, and I know about the Mandalorians and blah, blah, blah.
Oh, yes.
And so, you know, I've read, etc., you know, bits there, and I've seen, you know, other bits, but I'm not like massively into I know exactly how the drive works in the Millennium Falcon kind of level.
Yeah, no, that's a fair comment.
Which I am at with Star Trek.
Can we just what's the measurement that the Millennium Falcon's but and it's not distance.
5 parsecs.
It's actually what is it? The
Kessel Run.
In under 5
parsecs. What is a parsec again? A parsec isn't a measure of time, is it?
No, it's a measure of distance, isn't it?
It's a measure of distance.
The joy.
I love how they explained that away. They said it was just because it was a mistranslation. And it's like, no, it's because George Lucas doesn't know science. He liked the word.
Yeah.
Didn't so he used it and got it wrong.
Did they make a joke about that in episode 7 with what was it, Rey kind of questioning this whole, you know, parsec thing?
Now can we talk about the new films a little bit? Because
can I you know, squeeze in here that it really bothers me that now everyone calls it the Millennium Falcon in the new films, whereas in the originals they called it Falcon. That irks me. Including Han Solo, because he said the Millennium Falcon. And I'm sure Chewie says it as well, the traitorous bastard. Millennium Falcon!
Oh, dear.
Yes.
Yes.
So, new movies.
The new movies, which, I mean, I wouldn't say they're necessarily making me feel extra in love with, like, the original films or anything. But it is making me like the universe more, if that makes sense.
Yeah, because the universe...
Sense.
It does, because that's the thing. I'm not into the science-y bits, but I just love how the universe works.
As an aside, right, I know Cookie has played them, but have either of you two... played the Knights of the Old Republic
games. But no. I know that they are highly recommended and that some of the best games BioWare have ever made.
Yes.
Where I wouldn't go that far.
I would.
I would.
And they have aged.
Considering what Mass Effect 3's like, I would.
Yeah, I would get... we'll just leave the last few hours to the T-Boy. And what could go wrong? Oh, fuck, that's what can go wrong. Never mind, it'll be better with Andromeda. Oh. Oh.
What's meant to be the problem with Andromeda?
So much. Andromeda's problem was Andromeda.
Yeah, there was a very good post-mortem of Andromeda where they had this big idea about having it, you know, more or less open galaxy.
Hmm.
And they had a generation engine and such, so it was a little bit No Man's Sky in that regard. But they ran into lots of problems and they basically had to cull it hugely back and trash most of the stuff that they did. Ooh. Which is why when it was released, it was in such a state.
Wow.
Because they had to throw out something like 18 months worth of dev work just, you know, because it wasn't going anywhere. And yeah, it's you know, classic EA pushing a developer to have something out by a time instead of when it was ready. But yeah, one of the things I liked about KOTOR was that it pretty much it was set centuries before.
Yes,
but the way it explained it was that technology didn't really move that far because it had pretty much reached the pinnacle.
Mm.
So it was a little bit like, you know, oh, when someone's invented the wheel or the internal combustion engine, it's absolutely amazing. But in, you know, in the modern era, oh, you've got a wheel. Yeah, it's just a wheel. What do you want me to say about it's a wheel? It's a bloody wheel. You know, everyone knows how a wheel works. So it was kind of like that, but with FTL drives, blasters, you know, anti-grav, you know, things like that. It was just, you know, technology had sort of plateaued. So it sort of stayed very similar. You know, the style of the box might change, but the fundamental technology that was inside stayed pretty much as it was because, you know, there wasn't much else you could do.
Yeah.
So that was, I quite like that explanation of the, you know, the world.
And that explanation wouldn't satisfy me, I don't think.
Well, it kind of explains why, you know, you've got this whole galaxy and there's no one who comes out of, you know, a certain corner of the galaxy and, you know, manages to, you know, completely wipe everyone else out. Because their technology is just massively in advance of everyone else's. It's just it's a little bit like, you know, the sort of Star Trek thing where it was very rare that they would encounter another species that would have a completely different type of drive or a completely, you know, kick-ass weapon. Everything would be sort of, you know, a little bit better, a little bit worse, but it would be the same kind of technology.
Which is cool.
But it's a way of approaching it, which means that things don't vary too much.
Yeah, but I mean, one of the interesting things on the expanded universe, which I was hoping they might have used some of the ideas in the newer films, was an enemy that did cross into their galaxy from another galaxy called the Yuuzhan Vong, and I appreciate that is probably not how you pronounce it. I've only read the name of the book, but they were quite interesting because they were a warrior class from another galaxy with different technology, which was actually based around life. Their ships were powered by creatures who actually
It's basically they have ships and they're kind of grown like coral.
Yes. And all their weapons are grown from the same coral. And because they're from a different galaxy, the Force does not affect them.
How would that work, though? What?
That doesn't make sense.
I'm from a different place. Up and down don't matter to me. So now I think they're trying to do.
Totally different galaxy, their rules are different, and the Force has no effect on them. Because
yeah, but surely it's the same universe, and even then, they're in Star Wars' like universe. When Star Wars tries to do just science, I just feel like I think Star Trek does science way better.
I think it's they have a completely different kind of midichlorian.
Don't start swearing.
And once and then never again. Because everyone hated it. Thing is, with midichlorians, I know exactly what he was trying to go with, but he did it badly. He was trying to do mitochondria. Hmm. Which, for the tiny science bit, concentrate. The mitochondria are little cells within our cells which act as batteries. If our cells didn't have mitochondria producing, massively more energy, we would be more like kind of plants. When it would come to an energy level and how fast we move and how fast we live, so things like that. So yeah, the entire idea is that very early on in life, we were separate from mitochondria. Plants don't have mitochondria. There's an example. Only animal cells have mitochondria. So we kind of, maybe one of our, one of the cells tried to absorb and, eat a mitochondrial, cell, and it didn't quite work, and it ended up getting like a caffeine buzz from it instead. Yeah. And that's another reason why mitochondrial DNA is only passed down the female line, not the male line.
It does, because it's always made me think that the way the Force is described, I'm pretty sure in some of the other bits, is that it's more like almost like the electromagnetic force in this universe, where it's like it's everywhere, but it's just like manipulated in certain ways. In response to stimuli and whatnot. So having kind of tiny things in cells, it kind of doesn't really seem to make much sense to me.
It's kind of so long as you explain everything in a more an abstract way, that's fine. When Star Wars falls over is when they try to be a bit too specific. Yeah. About how something works, about the science behind it, because a lot of the rest of it is just because we want a faster than light drive, and because we want blasters, and because we want a planet-sized super weapon that can destroy entire planetary systems. We want those, and we can kind of explain it in a loose term, and everyone goes okay. But if you say it's because of special unobtainium. That we control with our midichlorians.
Actually,
then everyone just goes. I'm just going to go back to because it does.
That's a thought, because obviously in Rogue One you have basically the Death Star, which pretty much has a fast and light drive in of itself.
Yeah.
What about the power source for that? Because presumably that would have to be absolutely humongous.
Well, that was part of the idea behind that, why it blew up if you hit the power source. Because it was such a stupidly powerful weapon.
But, I mean, you'd obviously have the power source for the gun itself, in essence. But then you'd have to have the power source for the fast and light drive. Do they share the same power source? Is it a case of if it goes somewhere and blows up a planet, do they have to wait for it to recharge or something?
I think it's supposed to be that that's why they, when they jump into the system at the end of A New Hope, that's why it takes them a while to get around the sun, so they've got this clear firing line for the planet. That I think that was in one of the novelizations.
Mm-hmm.
It could jump, and then it would need time to charge up the weapon.
Meanwhile, could we just talk, if we're going to be talking about massive giant objects that destroy other giant objects, aka the Death Star Mech, three essentially?
The Starkiller.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In the new films. It's like, why is she with that fucking thing? Is A, it destroys the star. So you're sucking up a star to then, in the moment of obviously destroying a star, you know, obviously that has its own little small solar system around it in that. I mean, okay, it might be slightly lonely stars and there's not much orbiting it, but the gravitational fuckery that would happen to your massive craft, even okay, you've absorbed some, but the changes in gravity around it from sucking up a sun and trying to compensate for that, would be quite fucking terrible. But also, they got to the point. I mean, like the Death Star kind of made sense. It was light and sprightly in comparison to the Star Killer. You know, it was tiny. And the Star Killer is just so fucking massive. And at this point, it's like, why the fuck are you guys just not? Why don't you just build your own fucking asteroids, or just hijack some asteroids and just throw them at a fucking planet? Why destroy a valuable resource, which is a sun? Because let's face it, like a star is a valuable resource for generating new fucking elements and material in a star. Why would you do that? Why would you waste a star? Holy fuck, guys! Holy fuck! They're so stupid!
Yeah, apart from the whole problem with as soon as you, everything orbits around everything else.
Yeah.
So if you remove a massive gravitational tethering point, which is a star.
Yeah. The planets are fucked anyway.
Not only will the planets be, fucked, because they'll suddenly, lose what they're orbiting, around and just fly off and go who knows where. But not only that, but you will also alter how that part of the galaxy is rotating.
Yes, your star charts are going to be absolutely useless as well.
Nerd hat here. Yes, admittedly, but, these are the things which occur to me, and they really do.
Also, if you're basically sucking a star dry, presumably that mass is coming into the Star Killer, which means that it's basically gained the gravitational equivalent of the sun as well.
Plus,
how can it?
I mean, how does it not collapse in on itself? I'm not sure. These are the, like, I can just about deal with not thinking about technology most of the time when watching the Star Wars films, but the Star Killer is the one that's just made me be like, what the fuck? What the fuck? And that's not like I was a particularly big shot when it came to understanding physics when I was at school, but I'm just like, gravity is a thing. It's a thing, and you're dealing it at that level, that quantum level, where it's just kind of like, it's big, and just crazy shit would happen. Really crazy shit.
Also, technically, if you're basically, kind of got a Death Star, which is obviously about the size of a fucking moon, and you're basically, you've got fast and light driving that, why don't you instead...
We must also remember that it is no moon.
Why don't you instead basically just invest more in fast and light drives, right, and then strap them to asteroids and then send them at planets? Much easier.
Much easier, much more cost-effective, unlikely to destroy vast swathes of the galaxy so that you can't run your empire. I mean, what's the point in wanting to have an empire that stretches the stars if you keep denying yourself the resources necessary in order to do this? It's a very bad strategic move. I mean, that'd be the equivalent of setting fire to lots of oil fields after invading an area and then wondering why oil prices are going up. But, I mean, it's not like we don't have real life examples of why this is a bad idea on a much smaller scale.
My interpretation, and I am aware that I will sit here and think up excuses for someone else's problem that they've created, but the everything in the Star Wars universe seems to be based on fusion, because if you count the number of times they will mention fusion reactor.
Mm.
Or, something like that. And, that's probably just because George Lucas heard it and thought it sounded cool. But that seems to be what, generally what their, energy source seems to be. So it kind of makes sense. But, the whole Death Star and Starkiller, they are just doomsday weapons. They are the, we will do this, and... I think it's supposed to be the big stupid sci-fi or sci-fantasy version of the what the H-bomb is supposed to be. It's supposed to be the, you know, a deterrent. If we do this once or twice with this stupid weapon, then everyone else will think, well, shit, we don't want everything blown up. We'd best not, you know, challenge them. And, of course, when the Starkiller base would, you know, will FTL into a system and then, you know, absorb the sun, it's already kind of doomsday. I mean, although I'm not entirely clear whether it absorbs the whole thing. But, yeah, anyway, so that, you know, it will absorb it and then it will fire it as quickly as possible at whatever it's supposed to destroy in that system.
Which also makes me think, basically, if you have something the size of a moon moving fast, you know, pretty speedily, you know, along a trajectory that goes close to a planet, surely that planet's orbit around the sun would be affected by the large gravitational force of that, you know, celestial body, in essence.
I mean, You could just go into a system and blow up the sun, and then you've effectively doomed that entire system. But you could also say, on the other hand, that if you've done that, then that would leave whatever civilization was there, or whatever base was there in that system, to try and escape in FTL ships. But if you show up, suck up the sun and then fire it at, you know, the planet, then you trying to wipe out what you've gone there for. But yeah, it's a big dumb weapon. And I suppose it does that job.
So I feel like we've basically started trashing Star Wars a little bit.
Oh my god. It's just the science, man. It's just the science. Yes. Anyway, this is really all we've got time for. If anyone wants to trail back through the December archive, where we've talked about Star Wars in depth, because we talked about the machete cut quite a bit in one episode, we will find the link for that episode and include a link to that episode in the show notes for this episode, so that if you want to give that a listen, if you've never listened to it before, or you want to give it a re-listen.
Before we bugger off, is something that I was just reminded of. Witch Hazel, or Hazel Monforton on that there Twitter, she's a fan of the dynamic between Kylo Ren and Rey.
Mm.
And I do think that she's going to be proved right, unless J.J. Abrams buggers up episode 9.
Yeah.
In the first of the new trilogy, you had Kylo trying to destroy Rey.
Yeah.
And then in The Last Jedi, you had Kylo trying to recruit or join up with Rey, join us.
Yeah.
I think in part 3, if the dynamic makes any damn sense, we're going to have Kylo asking Rey to save him.
Mm. For a second there, I thought he was going to say asking Rey to go to the prom with him.
No, that would be in a soap opera, which Star Wars isn't.
So they might be dancing at the end of the Ewoks, banging on the drums, just like at the end of Return of the Jedi.
No.
Or being fired out of a cannon.
Okay, that is all the time we've got this week for this episode. So it is good night from...
It's good night from me, Kylo Wood. I'm Super Retroid on Twitter and Retroid on Eurogamer.net.
And it's good night for me, Paul, a.k.a. Cookie. You can find me on Twitter as @1_Cookie.
It's good night for me, Paul Blewett, and I'm on Twitter as @PaulBlewett.
And it's good night for me, Emily King. You can find me on Twitter at @MKingMA. That's EMKingMA. You can find notes for this episode over at nerdassemble.co.uk. You can follow us on Twitter at @NerdsPodcast or Facebook at @NerdsAssemblePodcast. We're on iTunes and Stitcher. And that's everything. What's your next lot of homework?
That's homework.
Well, yeah, because it was like watch a bit of Star Wars.
The geeky homework.
Emily's now going to find the show notes, the other show notes, the one bit of planning that we've got going at the moment. Where's my Evernote notebook? So the next special is Final Fantasy.
Ooh.
Yeah. So,
I believe that was mine, wasn't it?
It is, but quite frankly, I can geek out with you on that anyway. And maybe I'll have finished Final Fantasy 15 by that point.
Very possible.
So, yes, so that'll be episode 221 is going to be about Final Fantasy. So you don't have to play all the games. And we advise, actually, do not, even if it takes us forever to record the episodes, as it sometimes does, do not try and play all the Final Fantasy games between now and the next episode, because I don't think you can sanely do that.
Well, you...
not, like, to completion.
Story-wise, you probably could.
However, if you want to challenge yourselves to do it and send us evidence, then by all means,
That's main.
We will
games.
Not be checking all our evidence.
That's main games only. None of the sequels to the mainline games.
If someone can explain to me why Final Fantasy VIII wouldn't be solved with a visit to Relate, then that would also be a help. Seeing as when I got to that reveal part of the story was supposed to be duh, duh, duh. My reaction was, what? That's it? Jesus.
So yeah, TT World, Final Fantasy. But yeah, so that's it for this episode. Good night.
Good night.
Good night. May the force be with you.
Always.
You've turned off your Sargon computer.
Sit down.